6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Full Plex Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at LifeForce, joined virtually as always by Anna Forsyth at A4Scythe03. As you've gotten accustomed to us saying, no longer on the team, but still hurting us with cap recapture, Matley at Matley_61, and on LTIR until his deal is done, Adam O'Neill Carter at Adam FOC. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad. You know, as we let off IOTA, for those of our patrons that tuned in, it's been a week.
It's been a week. But Canucks aren't playing today, so we have a break.
We do. I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoy that there's Canucks hockey almost every second night. But then being a guy who has like 400 different podcasts and other things that I get up to, it's hard when the Canucks play every second night.
Yeah. And as you're listening to this, of course, they do play tonight. They play Edmonton. But
as not we're recording tonight, tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's fun, especially during a pandemic, that your evenings are filled, but, there's cricket to be watched, and I'm trying to, write or read or other things. So it's a bit relentless, especially when you get two disheartening losses in a row. Let's put it that way.
But to help cheer our listeners up, we have a phenomenal guest in Sarah Lau joining us. You might know Sarah on Twitter at Nuxed. But as we talked about in our last show, she wrote an article called Our Voice. It's actually the first in a series that helps elevate the voices of different women from different backgrounds in sport and helps them tell their story in their own words about what it was like. Enjoying sport when they first started, paying attention. Like, there's one story that I'll talk about with Sarah that resonates most with me because it's a father-daughter connection. But I'm so glad that we were able to get Sarah on the show.
Yeah, totally. We're trying to kind of expand who we have as our guests, not just the Canucks media that you see, who are great and we love talking to them, but it's kind of good to get different perspectives that you don't hear from every day as well.
Oh, no doubt. And that's something that I'm proud of us here at C4 for doing is that we do try to explore different voices. We're not the only, Vancouver centric sports podcast out there that does this, but I am proud that we do and that we can slap that as a badge of honor. Speaking of getting different voices involved in the show, we also now have a text line because we're like going pro. The C4 text line, 604-200-6201. 604-200-6201. But we actually have a text message and a voice message that was left for us to share on this show of listeners, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. So those different voices could be yours, dear listener. So, call in, leave a voicemail, send us a text if you hate your voice.
If you just like sending texts, doesn't have to be because you hate your voice.
No, that's true. I'm just thinking of, it took me so long to get over hearing my own voice in a podcast. Like the few guest spots I did initially, it would take me a long while to listen to them because I don't like my voice, but I'm not sure who does really.
I will be the first one to say that I don't like the sound of my own voice, even though I often say that I like the sound of my own voice. It's different. What I hear and what I hear, which visually you can't see me doing right now, is so weird. But I think it's the same with everyone, right? I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's to do with just your voice sounds different when you speak and then when you hear it recorded. I think it's to do with the vibrations and what you're hearing it through. But yeah, it's a different experience. I love talking. I don't love the sound of my own voice. It's different. And I get a lot of positive attention from the sound of my voice over here, because not everyone knows that my voice is actually incredibly boring. If you went back to the UK, you would think, oh, there's actually way more interesting voices. But you know what? I'll take it.
Speaking of voices, we're going to obviously hear from Sarah, as we said earlier on, later on in the show, joining us with Half a Laugh Empty. But let's take no further amount of your time away before we start talking about the Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Canucks had an okay week. I mean, I guess it's sort of like the perspective of how much water is in the glass. Last week, we recorded our episode with Jordan, and the Vancouver Canucks were playing at that time. They got themselves a loser point against Calgary. They found a way to gut it out and get that point to only lose real darn quick in overtime. They turned things around. They got a win on the Wednesday, and then they lost to Winnipeg on the Friday, only to then find a way to get the loser point on Sunday. And you might argue, like, well, hey, you know, 4 points out of four games isn't horrible, all things considered. It's difficult when those loser points are against teams in your own division, because every game is this season.
Yeah, just remind me, how many points you get for moral victories? I forget.
I think you get 5 points.
Oh, well, that's
five
good.
5 points. 5 points. 5 points for moral victories. So the Vancouver Canucks are already, in possession of the President's Trophy. And the season is only, what, a third of the way through-ish? I think we've reached the halfway point yet. No.
Yeah. Maybe we should get Prime Minister's Trophy, because we're only playing Canadian teams.
True. But of those four games, the one that hurt the most, and we talked a little bit about this on IOTA, was the game on Sunday, so yesterday for us, but you know, a couple days ago for those listening now, where the Vancouver Canucks were in control until they were not, yet found a way to right what was wrong, only to then see the right go wrong. Like, I don't know, I was trying to have a play on words, and I pulled a mat.
I was going to say, I got a little lost there, and I think so did you.
But, I did.
Yeah, it was a mixed bag, and I think I actually don't know what I was more annoyed by, like which Winnipeg game I was more annoyed by. But it was one of those games where, like, on the Friday game, you just felt Canucks were in it the whole game until they weren't. Because that's the thing with hockey, you can't always look at the scoreline, because you get those dirty, empty net goals, which we know don't really count unless you win and Louis Erickson scores them. Then they count. I will say the Winnipeg game on Sunday was more frustrating, because there was that dangerous hope with Canucks tying it late again and then losing in the first minute of overtime again.
Yeah. Well, you know, the reason I talk about the Sunday game being rough was that the Vancouver Canucks looked like it was like one of their bounce back games. Like, we're starting to see where they'll a good effort, but they don't get the points, and then they seem to put things together, and they do. We saw this against sort of Calgary, where things didn't really work out well on the Monday. They had sort of put right things in place. They came back and they dominated the Flames in Calgary on Wednesday. Then you're right. Yeah, the game on Friday, where the Vancouver Canucks were essentially in it. They were in it throughout. Brossard got the shutout, but that empty net goal at the end to ice it was really the only point in time where you didn't think the Vancouver Canucks would find a way to squeak one pass. So then, yeah, we come to Sunday, and what happens? The wheels fell off a little bit, but when Petey scored that goal to tie it up, which first and foremost, I wasn't sure was going to happen, not because I didn't trust Petey, but it felt to me that the Vancouver Canucks were trying to have a game of 100 pass before they could, like, shoot.
I mean, yes, it's true, but I tweeted this at the time too, but I had this weird feeling that was happening. And I never feel that, not when
a premonition?
Yeah, which is strange to me. And it's strange that it was a positive one. But it just felt like it was actually building to a goal, which, yeah, as I say, it doesn't happen very often to me. But I agree that Canucks, should we say they overthink things? I mean, it's essentially a power play in a way. You know, you pull the goalie.
Well, it was a power play with the empty net. Like, they had a 6-on-4 advantage. They had a lot of space, a lot of players on the ice, and it's like every player had to be involved like 6 times.
Yeah. Yeah. But unlike when they, you know, start a power play with the second unit and have the second unit play more than half of it, I had some confidence that it was leading up to a goal, but I agree, it's a lot of passing.
Yeah. The, you know, sort of sticking on that last game on Sunday, the Vancouver Canucks in overtime, like, you had the best line out. You had Petey, Brock, and Quinn out in the ice against three forwards. The Jets had three forwards on the ice, which I understand some teams, they want to, you know, go all out. One of those forwards was PLD, which we'll learn about in a moment, became problematic. But they were generating chances, and I'm not going to lie here. When I saw Quinn in deep in the corner, I'm thinking, is this good? Because if he loses the puck, there's two forwards back there. It can't be that bad. Only to see PLD essentially turnstile Brock, because Brock was trying to skate like, not, he wasn't really skating backwards. It looked like he was skating sideways because he wanted to be.
Which isn't good.
No,
you don't really get anywhere.
The common saying is that forwards can't skate backwards. And it was obvious if you watch the replay, Brock sort of had come to the realization himself that it, going backwards wasn't in the cards. So let me see how I can do whatever I can do. PLD got around, and then that was that. That hurt a little bit. But then I'm also okay with the Vancouver Canucks sort of playing fast and loose in overtime. I just wish that that game didn't get to overtime. In so much that the Vancouver Canucks is winning in regulation. Let me rephrase that. I'm glad it got to overtime the way it did.
Yeah.
I'm just not happy that it had to, and then
No, I completely agree. The Canucks let that lead get away from them. I mean, we've talked about like the good things and the bad things that come from playing a team more than once in a row. But one of the good things, I don't think there's many, but is that you do get these storylines developing. And obviously the game started off with, you know, Zach MacEwen memorably, memeably throwing down, and with Forbort. Is that how you say it? Like, I feel like I've read his name 100 times, and I still don't know.
I don't know. Derek.
Derek. So, although I'm not in general really into fights or stage fights especially, but the storyline was there, right? And it started off well, and it felt like you were building to, you know, Canucks got beaten narrowly, but there was some bad blood developing right at the end. They weren't going to let that happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Except they did.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about, you know, Derek. At the end of the earlier game on Friday, Derek Forbort was a little upset that Hoglander had caught him up high. Now, there is a distinct size advantage if you didn't see the play. Essentially, Hoggy hitting Forbort was why, you know, it felt like he got a shoulder to the head. Mm-hmm. It's not Hoglander's fault. He stood tall. It's just that's the size
he's
difference.
He's not all that tall.
Yeah, I mean, it's the reality of things. So Forbort doesn't like this. So what does he do? He proceeds to go and take his lumber and cross-check a handful of times. No call, because, hey, you know what? Frontier justice or whatever, playoff hockey, who knows? Small guy hit a tall guy. And we're going to talk a little bit about hitting people later on and some of the crazy ideas there are people in the league have. But eventually, Forbort takes this holding penalty against Hoglander. The referee's arm goes up late in the game. It's 2-0 because they got that empty net goal. And then once he sees that he's getting the penalty, he decides to go and take a few more liberties with Hoglander, crashes him in the boards, gives him the lumber again. And obviously the Vancouver Canucks respond because they're seeing, you know, Neil's getting taken advantage of, young rookie, you had Sutter on the ice for Tannen was there. Trying to think who else was on the ice at the time. But scrum ensues. There's like, you could argue that there were third man here, third man there, whatever, couple fights, whatever. And the referees decide that all Forbort's going to get is 2 minutes for holding. Everything that he had done, face washing, punching, cross-checking, getting in the scrum, trying to, you know, get at different Vancouver Canucks players, that matters not. He, however, gets a game misconduct. So 2 for holding and a game misconduct. not a misconduct, a game misconduct, which I looked it up. The only difference between these two penalties is one, that the league gets to review it, and two, the game misconduct carries with a slightly higher fine. But it's not anything to do with how late in the game it was. It was just a weird assessment of a penalty. But get this, Jake Virtanen gets himself two for roughing in a game misconduct. Now, I love Jake. Jake decided, well, if you're going to go after one of our guys, I'm going to go after one of yours. And that's all. Yeah. Out of this entire, like, you know, scrum on the ice, that's all that comes out of it was a four-on-four hockey with some even up action. Like,
the matching penalties, like how that was the upshot of the whole thing, really bugged me, I have to say. And I think the officiating in both sets of games was poor. Like, and Canucks got away with a lot in the game on Sunday, I would say, right up until the third period when the refs seemed to remember where their whistles were.
Yeah.
But the Canucks got away with a lot. They should have got quite a few penalties. So it's just a shame to see it, because I think it makes the game less safe for everybody, especially Nils Höglander in this instance.
And that's the struggle I have, is when I look at the officiating and how they evened it up after all of that, I still think the Frontier Justice is going to take place, a stage fight, like, you know, Big Zach coming in and feeding some fists to forward. But the fact that the league, or at least the officials on the ice, not even not so much the league, the officials on the ice are like, yeah, that we're going to call a spade and let the code sort it out. It's unfortunately not good for the game. We've talked about this in the past. Like, I understand how that fight might be necessary, but it's then a staged fight. Like, everyone know it's going to happen. It happens, and it's like you move on. Why don't you just call the game the right way the first time around?
Yeah. I mean, we'll dig into this a little later, but I hate the code. The code is stupid. Like, it shouldn't be up to the players to have to officiate the game.
Yeah, but they do, because the code requires it of them. Unless you're in the playoffs, at which point the code says that you don't, or you do, because you don't know. Since there's the code of the code.
Gets the game complex within the game.
Yeah. Oh, man. Anyhow, the Vancouver Canucks, as we said, got themselves 2 points out of four games. Arguably not the worst results, but in the wacky season that it is, it doesn't help them out, because they're giving points away to those teams they're fighting with. We'll talk more about the week that we'll be, and some thoughts on the Vancouver Canucks a little bit later on. But why don't we take ourselves a short break here before we bring Sarah in to join us with Half Full, Half Empty, listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
As we mentioned last weekend, just a moment ago in Rewind, we are pleased to be joined by blogger extraordinaire and one of the most positive Vancouver Canucks fans you will find in Canucks social media. We have Sarah Lau, who you can find on Twitter at Nuck Said. And again, thank you for taking us up on the offer to join the longest running, best mediocre Vancouver Canucks podcast there is, Sarah.
Happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. I think a year or so ago, I might have chatted with you just sort of through Twitter. But I'll be honest, I'm horrible with following through on things. I'd like to blame Baby Force for that.
Well, she is adorable.
Oh, yes.
She is that.
That's the reason people follow me.
She's a perfect distraction.
Yeah. But I'm glad we finally got you on. And I think the timing itself works out well because of your phenomenal article, Our Voice, which talks to, you know, women's voices in sport. And I know when I saw you sort of inquiring for voices to join you with this, this post. I tried to amplify that as best as I could.
I appreciated it.
To get
you're very kind.
The different voices to join you, but it was a very compelling read. Like I was blown away by the detail that you were able to obtain from all the different women that that participated, and
it was amazing the different voices that stepped up and were vulnerable with their own truths. Like I had an idea of what I thought it would be, and then when people started sending in their stories, I was just like you said, blown away. Absolutely.
Yeah, what I loved was there was such a variety of voices, you know, some people that had grown up in the 70s or the 80s Canucks hockey that Chris likes to talk about where, you know, defense was optional. But then right through to Clarissa, who's like, I think early 20s or something like that. Yeah, so, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was great to read the different kind of perspectives and stories from these amazing women.
That was my favorite part too, seeing just like the different generations, but like we're all still connected by this same thing.
Totally.
So, I mean, out of curiosity, you know, how long did you have this idea before you decided to put things together? Was it something that sort of happened, you know, organically where you felt like, hey, I'd like to use my platform that I have access to? Or was it that you, because I know like Anna and I talked about this in previous episodes, and you had expressed it as well. I mean, women's voices for one reason or another continue to be maybe not ignored, might not be
but pushed
the right
aside.
Way, but yeah, pushed aside, right? Like, and it blows my mind that this still continues to be the case. So sort of coming back to the birth of this series that you've started writing about, like what was the impetus? Was there a moment or was it just
It started it'd been ruminating for a while, but then like there was a moment during the playoffs in particular where a lot of things happened and like being called a distraction by an on-air analysis. I won't even mention my name, but we all know who I'm speaking of. That was like one thing that just like kept pinging in the back of my mind. And then you'd see like more and more like stories come, not anything in particular, but just like more and more people saying similar experiences or completely different than what I'd experienced, just like, and then not all men, but a lot of men reacting a certain way. And it just blew my mind that still in 2021 these are conversations that we still need to have, that our voices are just as compelling, just as moving, just as important. Like just because we have a different perspective doesn't mean that we don't count, like that we need to be not necessarily viewed as even worth being a part of it, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Yeah, as you say, you know, it's something we should have moved on from, but we clearly haven't, so I think it was really important to show all these different perspectives, because a key theme in all the stories was, you know, these women just having their fandom questioned just because of being a woman. And I just wondered if you could speak to that, like your own experiences of that and what you noticed in the stories of these women.
Of my own experience, I can count on one hand the amount of times I was made to feel in, like, let's see, how many games are at home in a regular season? 41. I went to about half last year. I can count on one hand the amount of times I wasn't made to feel welcome in that building because of my gender.
Right.
That, I mean, like, that's just like a most, that shouldn't be. Like, when you go to Rogers Arena or any arena, regardless of who you are, you should be. If you're supporting the home team or whichever team you're there to support, you should not be made to feel like you don't get to be here because you're, you know, like you don't fit. I'm like, no, it's supposed to be a place where we're all allowed to be, but it was not. And when I was reading all these other women's stories that they were sending in, I was just blown away by the different experiences they've all had that were so, in some cases, so very different, but also at the very heart, so similar. And like the disconnect that we're made to feel because of whatever reason, gender, race, and all of it.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. Something that really rang true with me, I can't remember who brought it up, but was the idea of the cool girl stereotype. And that's kind of been in discourse a little bit recently, but I really recognize that in myself growing up as a football fan in the UK, like just constantly trying to prove myself and be one of the boys. And yeah, it just gets tiring, just the idea of, yeah, you know, you can be in this space.
Exhausting.
Yeah, totally. Just you can be in the space, but you have to have this level of expertise and you must prove that over and over again.
Over and over, like, oh, you're a fan, but do you know this random fact from 1952 about this original 16?
Yeah.
Does it matter if I do or I don't? Like, are you watching the game that we're currently here for?
Totally. Yeah. So, yeah, that really resonated with me. And, yeah, just this idea that, like, being a like woman in like men's sports and then being a man in like the sports space, it's just it's just night and day, just like
night and day, absolutely.
And if you just to take, this is quite an extreme example, but if you look at an NHL panel, intermission panel on any given night, the level of expertise like of career broadcasters compared to like players, like if there's like if there's just an ex player in the panel, just the level of expertise is often really low, like they just think absolutely. Playing the game is enough, whereas like there's this hugely qualified woman who spent her career in broadcasting and does a huge amount of research.
Usually silenced for most of that panel because she's a woman. It's frustrating.
That's definitely true.
The thing that that struck me most, and I started going back to the article, was the story that Ali chose from the chair. For those of you who do, and again, go read it. Snuxa.com. I'll include the link in our show.
And there's more coming.
This is volume one. That's right. There is going to be future volumes. But she talks about how she fell in love watching hockey with her dad. Now, being the father of a baby force, I'll be honest, there's a part of me that hopes beyond hope that she falls in love with sport because
it's a bond.
It's the bond. It's the connection. And, you know, I often poke fun at my wife because she's not really, like, she follows the Canucks if they're on, but she's not interested. It is not an area that for her is like sports in general is not her thing.
And that's fair.
And it's no different than like for, you know, anyone where if that's just no interest, that's fine. So for me, I truly hope that, you know, my daughter has that ability to love sport because one, I'll be honest, it gives me that person in the house that I can watch games with and actually wants to watch games. Not that my wife doesn't, but.
No, but there's something to be said about someone who shares that innate love as you and you watch it together and you share that experience. It's a special thing.
Yeah. But what I hope most is that, you know, Baby Force can then go and take this knowledge early on and build upon, like I commented on our pre-show that we have for our patrons, how I feel your knowledge of the Vancouver Canucks is far greater than mine. Like I have no problem conceding that.
You are very kind.
You know, but like, for me, if you were to go and say something, I wouldn't be like, oh no, you're not right. Or do you know the,
oh, I get Google tested most nights at the arena when I correct someone else's stat. Like sitting next to me, this guy was talking to, this is just one example, like from last season. My sister and I were in our regular seats. These guys were having a conversation. It was about Quinn Hughes and like the Calder stats. the rookie stats. And I was like, actually, no, that's not correct. I was like, such and such happened last night, and this is like the correct update thing. Like, oh no, you just want that because that means Quinn Hughes didn't. I'm like, no, that's just a fact. But okay. And they're like, oh, well, I don't think so. Then they Googled it, like right next to me, and they go, oh my goodness, she was actually telling the truth. I'm like, why would I make that up?
Yeah. No, it doesn't happen to me a lot at hockey games, but it definitely happens all the time with like football. I get so annoyed at my roommate. He will double check something. I'm like, don't Google it. Don't Google it. I'm correct.
It's like, I'm telling you this because I know this. I'm not trying to like, whatever. It just irritates me.
Well, but I think that, you know, raises the point that you had shared earlier. Of the three of us that are talking right now, if I were to simply say that, whether or not I'm right, if I were to say it, the likelihood is someone would take my word because I'm an older man. Mm-hmm. So why would I be wrong? Like, I talk half the stuff that I say on a podcast, I'm wrong about. But because I say it, somehow it carries with it some gravita. Like that's what blows my mind. I don't think, and I mean, I get upset because I don't think I ever realized, you know, that difference. I might be even equally as guilty if someone, you know, maybe a woman would have said something like, are you sure? And to Anna, like I might've Googled it, but I don't know if I would go to the extent of Googling an answer to prove wrong, unless I was somehow committed to that. No, like, I'm positive this is the case. Like, are you sure? Like, I would have to be completely, you know, die on this hill. But I'd like to think that if I were to then be proven wrong, I'd be like, oh my God, I was wrong. I am so sorry. Like, I would be apologetic about it, at least. Doesn't make it better, but you know what I mean? Like,
No, but it does make a difference when that's, like, if that's your turnaround take from it, is to be like, oh, actually, like, wow, that is correct. Like, that's, like, oh, good on you for knowing. But instead of like, I don't think so. I think I'm going to have to double check. Oh, shoot. She's right. Like, I don't know if I still believe it. I'm like, you just Googled it.
Right.
Google lied to you now too? Like, okay.
Yeah. And that's totally that thing. And I'm trying to let go of it, but I still have it on the podcast where I know something's correct, but I'm going to double check before I say it because there is that idea of preempting the question, you know?
Yeah.
Or getting it wrong because you know you're held to a higher standard.
It's mind-blowing. It's like, and then sometimes in the back of my mind, like I have like the next thing already memorized to be like, yep, this is the next thing they're gonna say, so I gotta have that prepared. Like I already am anticipating like the next, like what's the next quiz pop quiz thing that's gonna come to mind.
Yeah.
Like, why do I need to have this pop quiz mentality in the back of my mind that is going to pop up every time if I'm just sitting there watching the game and I can't like fully enjoy it because I'm constantly like, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, speaking of watching the game, one of the things that I recall seeing is a picture that you had shared on social media. It might be more than one, but one that really stuck in my mind is you were at a game with a notebook, taking like profuse notes of what was happening during a game.
Yeah.
And like, to me, that's like the level of your commitment to a sport that you love. Me, I'm lucky if I'm really paying attention to what's going on because
I think that might've been from the draft.
It might've been. Okay. I might've been draft because I've never seen the notebook and I was like, wow.
Cause like, that one, I for sure had a notebook with me.
Okay. Yeah. I just remember seeing the picture and like, but that's the thing. Like I mean, I could say, oh, yeah, I totally was paying attention. And, you know,
and I don't you know what? After I post that picture, do you know how many replies and DMs I got? Like, oh, what was that notebook for? Like, why did you have that? Were you even watching what was happening? Did you even know what was happening? Like, my notebook literally said what it was.
Wow.
I was taking notes. I'm like, really? Like, I need to explain, like, having a notebook when I'm watching a draft. Okay. Cool.
If I am at the game, I will usually have a beer in my hand and that's about it. Like maybe my phone to occasionally check Twitter or Discord, but maybe just a beer, honestly.
Well, yes, but sometimes that's all you need. Just a nice, good, cold
beverage. Overpriced.
Enjoy the game.
Arena beer.
Overpriced. Oh, yes, well, everything.
I'm definitely.
But won't we all look forward to that when we can finally go back?
Yeah, I want to pay $17 for a beer.
I miss the live
hot dog. Balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Well, talking about the Canucks, obviously we're unable to go and watch games in person, but we have obviously been paying attention to what's been going on with the Vancouver Canucks. You are a positive Vancouver Canucks fan. I actually suggest you rival the positivity of someone like Clay. Clay this season.
That's big steps.
Clay's been getting a little, he's like, I don't know how to describe it. His positivity has sort of a negative undertone sometimes. Like, he pokes fun.
He has his Clayisms.
Yeah. But, you know, this season has not maybe been going as one might expect, considering how we saw them perform at the end of last year in the bubble. I have said episode after episode, it's wacky. Like, the Vancouver Canucks aren't out of it yet. But are there times when even your sort of positivity is like, oh, well, I'm not entirely sure it's going to work out, but I'm now going to look at the positives of the long term. Like,
I mean, I'll always find some sort of positive when I'm watching the Canucks because, to be honest, there's way too much negativity out there. Like, I have to turn Twitter off most game days because it's too much. I'm like, I see it. I know what's happening. I don't need to see all the negative stuff being said about it as well. Like, some people, it's like vitriol and it grows and grows and it gets like too much. And like, so if you're if I were to say something that I thought positive, which I have done in the past when like 7-8 years when they're really, really bad seasons, when I would try and spin like a positive from the game, like if it was like 7-1 or something horrendous, because we had lots of those back then, and be like, oh, did you even watch the game? Or you're really stupid if you think that there was anything positive. I'm like, well, I mean, sure, it was a garbage game, but I can still enjoy like the good thing that happened or think about like the good long-term things. Like I'm allowed to have the opinion. You're allowed to think it was terrible. I'm allowed to have a different perspective. Oh, I was just going to say, I'm just glad that we even have hockey at all. I didn't even know if we were going to get a season period, whether it was North Division or some weird bubble division. I just didn't know. So I'm choosing to be grateful for what for any of it, even the bad.
So, you know, on that note, so I'll use someone like myself as an example. I have been accused of not always being the most positive person, but I would like to feel that I respect that not everyone has to feel the way I do, because I'm me and everyone else is everyone else. Like, I'll be the first one to say, like, the Canucks did not look good. But then I would also temper that by saying, there's potential. I can see it. I wish that potential would just come to be today.
It's like, just played a good 20 minutes, good 40 minutes, couldn't play a whole 60.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm one of the snarkiest, sassiest people
But you're one of my favorites.
That's awesome to hear, because I think we're very different in our, like, sometimes in our perspectives on the team, but I like seeing what you put out there, and it's nice to hear that you also like to see what I put out there, even if it's kind of snarky sometimes, but...
Well, like, that's the thing. We can appreciate, like, the different perspectives, and like, you know what? That's actually valid, too.
Well, yeah, that's great to hear, because, yeah, I think the same way, because I think Canucks Twitter would be really dull if everyone was relentlessly positive, and it would be really dull if everyone was relentlessly negative. I think you need to have both, and I don't mind a bit of conflict, like, just no vitriol, please.
Yes, exactly. A bit, but we don't need to get vitriolic. That's just, it's too much.
Right.
Well, we talked about this past week, earlier in the podcast. Vancouver Canucks are
struggling. 2-2.
Yeah, they're, you know, I want to say struggling, because we see a game where they're in control until they're not against the Jets. They're giving points away. Unfortunately, just the way
Schmidt has the worst puck luck. since Ham Hughes.
Yeah, like, I mean, what do you think the Vancouver Canucks need to do to sort of turn their fortunes around?
I think they need to start, like, the way they played that last Calgary game, like, they need to find that, like, they're not going to score 5-6 goals every game. But they need to start getting a consistent 20 minutes turned into consistent for like the just little intervals, because then the game, as you said, it does escape you and you end up giving away points, and it's, instead of getting in the win column, you end up with overtime loss or a shutout. So we need commitment from top to bottom, all four lines.
It seems so simple when you say it like that.
It does, and then the simple just never is as simple.
Yeah.
Is it?
Well, I see, this is the struggle I have. Like, I completely agree that there needs to be a means to find that consistency. And we're starting to see glimpses of it. I just, mm-hmm. for me, a part of me wonders, is the issue, is it a coaching related issue where the players aren't necessarily buying into the message? Is it, you know, just functionally how the team is right now? Like, it's not a good thing when your coach is in their last year of their deal in a real turbulent season due to the pandemic. There's so many of these different organizational pressures. Do you think that comes into play when we talk about the inconsistency? Like, is it that the players themselves are
probably
thinking about a little bit of things?
Like a mental. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they sometimes overcomplicate it by the outside things, like those type of things, like the coach being on the final year, management, media, like all of those outside voices do start to get inside their heads and affect them mentally. And then they start to, you know, overthinking things. And when you're overthinking in a game, it does cost you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think just in a microcosm, you can see that in some of the power plays where you just see too many passes being made and you just think like it's
too
back
many
to
passes.
The Deans almost.
So much.
Yeah.
I'm like, so clean, that's overthinking. Crisp passes. Yes, too much passing. I think I yelled that at the TV. Like, stop passing so much. Get a few bucks on net, please. That's all I want to see on the power play. Just throw as many as you can.
The thing about the too many passes, that power play late game empty net against Winnipeg, I think the Vancouver Canucks bench was shouting shoot. Like, they were just throwing it around the perimeter. And finally, I mean, they were able to set Petey up. You could sort of almost see that happen.
But I mean, you could feel Petey wanting that puck
before
he scored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I love an angry Petey.
Well, as we look to wrap up the segment here, a couple quick questions for you. Who's your favorite Vancouver Canuck of all time?
Ooh, oh, that's hard. Like, first favorite Canuck I ever had was probably Marcus Naslund, because that was around when I really started getting into the Canucks, was the early West Coast Express days. Like, when I was always aware what was happening, but like, that's when that really kind of like started watching every game, mm-hmm. paying attention to all the stats, following not just the Canucks, but like following their rivals and be like, okay, who's on that team that I need to? So probably Naslund if I were to go back, or mm-hmm. Rick Rippon. That one still gets me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What would be your favorite Canucks moment of all time?
I have a few, if that's allowed.
It totally probably is. I mean, Anna gets to sit on the fence too, so.
Probably last year getting to see the Sedins jerseys retired. Mm-hmm. That was an incredible. And then the world went crazy. But that was a really nice thing to get to experience with like 18,000 fans. And then the year before that, and I took my grandpa to his first Canucks game.
Oh, cool.
Oh.
And we played Boston because he wanted to see an original six team. And we went to overtime and then Bo scored. And my grandpa was like, that's my favorite Canuck now. So since then, he started following the team. Aww. Well, they played so-and-so last game. You know, and he'll just like give me. Yeah.
That's awesome.
We're getting to witness Henrik's 1,000th. That was a really cool one, too. Cool. Not just because he scored on Lou.
And
but those are three off the top of my head.
Cool. And then one final question. And this is actually something we ask all of our guests to do, whether they join us for a segment, just a whole show. Any final words of wisdom to all of our listeners?
Final words of wisdom. Life's too short to take a hockey game so seriously. And let it how dare I? But no that would be my words of wisdom.
Those are probably some of the most powerful words of wisdom that we've had on this show.
Yeah. Also usually so dumb.
Like, I don't know when we get to the end of this show if I'm going to ask Anna for any, because, I mean, maybe I'll ask Anna, but I'm already tapping out.
Well, yeah, I'm not going after that, so.
Well, I'm glad you like them.
Yeah, that was great. We will say, just, like, make sure you're following Sarah on Twitter, at NuckSaid. Read, if you haven't already read Our Voices Volume 1, please do so, and watch out for Volume 2, because...
Or if you want to take part in Volume 2, let me know.
There we go. All our female fans, please reach out to Sarah and you can have your story.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Sarah, for joining us again. As Anna said, you can find her at NuckSaid on Twitter, NuckSaid.com, and we'll include the link to the Our Voice series in our show notes. We're going to take a very quick break before we continue Half Full, Half Empty.
Thanks so much, guys.
What a phenomenal guest. I mean, Sarah, I mentioned it. I've been trying to sort of get her on the show. I'm so glad that we were able to make that connection. And I'd love to get her on again after her second volume of her Our Voice series is published.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that we led into that chat talking about the code, because it's part of the macho BS, nonsense of hockey culture. So... honestly, hockey needs women. Men's hockey especially needs women, because they need to change the way they think. And they need a lot. So Sarah's part of the, you know, movement to offer different perspectives. So love that. Love her. Hopefully you get her on again down the line.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. And we can hopefully get around the technology issues that plagued us in, one, getting her to join us. Original plan was to have her join us for the full show, not just that segment. But then, two, the alternative solution, as you heard, had a few audio issues. So I apologize, but not to do her a disservice. Make sure you go check out her blog, NuckSaid.com, or follow her on Twitter, at NuckSaid. And if you have a voice you wish to contribute to the Our Voices, you happen to be a woman who simply enjoys sport, please reach out to Sarah. I'm sure she'd love to connect. Talking about the Vancouver Canucks and the week that will be. So right now we're recording on Monday night, so it's possible that things could happen between now and tomorrow night or tonight, depending on your perspective, when they play the Edmonton Oilers. But we now see the Vancouver Canucks face off against the Oilers, not only on Tuesday, but then again on Thursday before heading off to Winnipeg on the Monday night game, which again kind of throws us askew because of how we record. But I'm kind of feeling the Vancouver Canucks are reaching the point where they need to take a series. And if there is a series for them to take, it's this one against the Oilers upcoming. Like, they need 4 out of 4 points. There can't be any loser points sent Edmonton's way, because if Vancouver has a hope of making the playoffs, they need to start gaining some traction against the Calgarys, the Edmontons, and kind of the Winnipegs. I'm not too worried about the Sens right now.
Right. Yeah, I think we have a clearer idea, too, of the teams. I mean, caveat, that's a topsy-turvy season. But I think we do have a clearer idea of where we sit amongst the teams. And I do think, again, that it's Toronto at the top, Ottawa at the bottom, the rest in the middle, but Edmonton slightly above everyone else. So I think they're in definite second place in terms of talent depth, even though I think they – did Toronto just jump ahead of them tonight, maybe?
I think based on the stats, Toronto's up.
But it is pretty much Toronto, Edmonton.
Which, you know, a week ago, not at all the case. So this is a weird thing. Like, let me ask you this, Anna. Knowing that Vancouver Canucks can't beat the Canadiens.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even, like, include the Canadiens, but...
Who are currently having issues. I mean, every Canadian team, save for Toronto or Ottawa, because Ottawa's had issues all along. Toronto hasn't really had any issues, even though in that market they lose one game and everyone's getting fired and they need to change the coach. Mm-hmm.
I know. Edmonton's had
Edmonton's had its sort of issues and had a player meeting. Calgary's done the same thing. Vancouver's had issues, obviously. Winnipeg, actually, maybe Winnipeg's been consistent-ish. Like, enough that they haven't had any meetings, but Montreal's just had one.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Canucks had one and decided what came out of it was to wear work boots. So, terrific ideas.
And casual clothes.
Yeah, that worked super well. I mean, I know I'm super stuck up about the suits thing, but I just had to see one photo of how ridiculously good Petey and Bo looked coming into the arena. On the weekend, that was just like, yeah, casual was a dumb idea. They look so good. It just gets me hyped for a game. I'm sorry, it does. What were we talking about?
I'd be showing up in Under Armour sweatpants. And
yeah. Yeah, you'd be wearing shorts too, no matter the weather outside.
Yeah, I'm straight. I would be wearing shorts. You'd see me walk in wearing a polo and shorts.
Yeah, and you'd be like getting off the team plane in Winnipeg, being like, oh, it's chilly here, boys.
It's a dry cold. It's a dry cold.
But yeah, like, Canucks need to put some wins together. They really struggled in actually winning the games that they're in, that they're competing, that they're the better team in. And that might be good enough the first couple of weeks of the season, but it's not good enough for now. I know the season's maybe going on a little longer than we thought, but... Mm-hmm. Not in the North Division unless they slow it down. But yeah, like, they need to start like winning games that they have no business winning. Yeah.
The you know, standings as they exist right now, the Vancouver Canucks are in a bad spot. I mean, they're 4-0-9 on the season. To make the playoffs, a 500 record like Calgary technically isn't there right now. But if the Vancouver Canucks were to win a couple of games, that puts them into contention against the likes of a Montreal or potentially close to Winnipeg. Edmonton, maybe, depending if they pull away. So, yeah, they string a few games together. Good. If they get two wins out of Edmonton, somehow they figure out a way to get those two wins, I'm still going to remain optimistic. And if you've been listening to this, you know, season so far, you know, Anna and I have been somewhat optimistic. Matt was the negative one. We got rid of him.
Yeah.
It was must-win hockey, like, after, what, the first week. So he might have been right, but...
Does that mean that Matt's Trevor Linden? Because I don't like that. That gives Matt far too much credit.
I don't know. I thought he was Jim Benning, and we just made the right decision that the Canucks can never do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just to clarify earlier, when I said I wanted a bit of Toronto hysteria... It was meaning to fire Jim Benning, not Travis Green. So just wanted to clear that up.
I understood what you're saying, but it's probably a good call. Listeners might not have understood. Anywho, we'll obviously be back next week to see if we're right and the Vancouver Canucks can string together a few wins. As to whether or not we'll be recording before or after or during that game against the Jets, who knows? But hey, it's the way the hockey schedule works. You listen to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
F*** off. He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a f*** explanation about it. I can't.
You. F*** off. out of there.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
Ray Whitney. What the actual F?
Cutting straight to the point there. I think I said this off air, but I've never liked him. I've never trusted him. I've probably even brought this up before, but when he got asked in an interview, because I think he's a Boston College kid, or is he?
That I don't know.
I'd have to double check that, but, you know, he was asked, like, who he hated playing more, the Flames or BU. And, excuse me if I got his alma mater wrong. So he was at BU, so it would have been Boston College. And he said the Vancouver Canucks, which wasn't an option, Ryan. So, yeah, have never trusted him, ever. I actually just called him Ryan because I was so mad. never trust him. And now, like, that's definitely not change.
So for those of our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, he sat down with SI.com, essentially the Sports Illustrated online publication, and talked about sort of his perspective as the guy in charge of the NHL Department of Player Safety. So it seems that ever since, like, Burke and then...
So Burke's still there. Brian
Burke. No, I was thinking Brian Burke. Yeah, like, I'm just trying to think, like, when this became a thing. Like, there was always sort of someone in charge, but then they actually created a department. But anyhow, I mean, regardless, Ray Whitney's the guy in charge. And one of the things that we've always talked about on our show, you'll hear it throughout, NHL social media, the Department of Player Safety is just nice words. It is a complete spin the wheel, and who knows what the suspension might be or the discipline that might be meted out will be. There's very little inconsistency. It's hard to tell whether or not the league will actually come down on a player for certain actions. Those that you know they will, then there's doubt as to how significant. Well, Ray, and I'm going to paraphrase here as part of this article, said that when it comes to him, handing out punishment, he looks at the hits. You know, he remembers how he had to play. And if you went into, the boards with the likes of Niedermeyer or I can't remember who the other player was, like, you were going to get hits. You had to, as a player, learn how to take a hit. So if you go and put yourself in a bad position and you don't learn how to take a hit, then how is that fair to hand a punishment to a player that hits you? Because hitting's part of the game. And it's like, dude, you just went and wrapped up everything that is wrong about the NHL. I'm not against hitting.
Yeah, definitely, like, not. But,
you're suggesting that, oh, I'm sorry, it was a bad hit, but you put yourself in a bad spot. So it's actually not that bad of a hit.
Can I just say, this is another reason we need more women in men's hockey, because this article is just, like, so clearly victim blaming. It's hilarious. And I couldn't believe the tone of the article is just emphasizing Ray Whitney being such a clean player. So if anything, I thought it was probably trying to justify George Parris being in the position he was, like, who literally runs a clothing line called Violent Gentlemen. Like, crazy that's the guy in charge of player safety. But trying to present it as, like, the spread of opinion when really they're both in that old school code mindset, it's crazy to me. As I, like, put out in my Zach McEwen meme, like, NHL Department of Player Safety is a complete misnomer.
Yeah. I'll use the NFL as an example. Now, the NFL has its own issues. I mean, let's not, pussyfoot around that. The fact remains, though, in the NFL, they've decided that if you hit a quarterback above the shoulders, it's a penalty. We don't care if you meant to. We don't care if the quarterback, you know, put themselves in a position that you hit it, like you hit them, it's a penalty. Every one of those is reviewed. And if in that review, it's like, oh yeah, no, you meant to do that, you're ejected. It's not like you get a 2-minute penalty for roughing and the league reviews it later. You are ejected. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some that suggest that, oh, well, the problem here is they're flagging things that maybe should not have been a penalty. You know, I don't really have a problem with that. Yeah, you know what? Maybe it impacts the flow of the game, but eventually players are going to learn that, okay, I'm not going to take the risk here. And in the NHL, if they simply said head, like you make contact with a player's head, it's a problem. Eventually you'll see players change their game. It doesn't take hitting out. It's just like right now, like it's like, oh, well, if you look, the principal point of contact, the shoulder was into the person's chest and their head whiplashes and all of that jazz. Oh, okay. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to suffer a concussion because the whiplash caused his brain to turn into jello. But, yeah, it's all good. It's a good hit.
Yeah.
Is that brutal? I'm not entirely sure. It's a good hit.
Well, you could tell Ray Whitney was just, I mean, he probably did say this and it just didn't make it into the article that, like, oh, we're, you know, trying to take hitting out of the game the way that some people talk. And, you know, that old school mindset of always taking things to the extreme. Sure, if we get to that point where hockey players are afraid to hit each other, let's readdress the situation. Mm-hmm. But we are so far away from that at present. Where we're at is that players are getting put in danger. And I only feel like we're going to hear more and more about players that have been diagnosed with CTE. It's coming up a lot in rugby right now, and I think it's going to come up more and more in hockey because it is so dangerous. And obviously, player safety can only do so much. There's got to be some emphasis on the players and then the sport itself. But yeah, right now they're doing pretty much nothing to make the sport safer.
It comes down to a cultural shift within the game. And how I think the league can probably structure that is to simply go, you know, go to the extreme. Go so far that people say that's too much. Because the good thing about it being too much is that you're not in a place where, like, oh, is it enough? Like, you can always sort of draw yourself back. Player safety, if it's to the extreme, means players are safe.
Yeah, hopefully. But do we want them to be too safe?
Like, you know, that's the part that blows my mind. Too safe is a problem. It's a contact sport. You know, I don't disagree, but there are ways that the contact can take place within the confines of a game that in turn ensures that safety occurs. Stuff will still happen, mm-hmm. but you'll be able to find that sweeter spot by going to the extreme and then maybe dialing it back, as opposed to the, yeah, we'll change it here. We'll change that. We'll tweak the word here. We'll put a slash and say and or. And yeah, you know, I think there's a better way. Speaking of what the actual F, because, you know, this is the F word. As we let off the show, we now have a C4 text line, 604-200-6201, that you can either send a text message in or leave a voicemail. And one of the first voicemail that we received was friend of the show, Ian, from Saskatoon. And why don't we press play now?
Hi, this is Ian from Saskatoon. It's been a few years since I've sent in an audio clip for the show. But when Bell shut down TSN 40, I knew I wanted to send something in. When I moved to Saskatoon in 2009, the station was still known as the Team 1040, and I'll always remember it by that name. There were many great shows that I always checked in on over the years. I always enjoyed whatever show Don Taylor was a part of, whether it was Pratt and Taylor, BMAC and Taylor, BMAC, Donnie and the Moj, or Donnie and the Moj. There may be more that I'm forgetting. It's hard to remember them all. I would often check in on Sakaris and Price. They had a great show, and I'm sad to see it gone. I always used to love when Tom Larshad and John Shorthouse would call Canucks games. And even though Tom stopped calling games a decade ago, I'll always remember that time when they won the 50-50 live on CKNW 98 while they were calling a game. My thoughts and prayers go out to everyone affected by the shutdown, as well as those affected by the shutdowns in Winnipeg and Halifax. Thank you for the years of memories. And thank you, C4, for hosting the longest running and my favorite Canucks podcast. Bye.
As you heard, there are still sort of raw emotions to the news that TSN or Team 1040 is no more. And I love the fact that Ian was able to share some of his memories, you know, including, you know, Tommy Larscheid. Although, in fairness to Tommy, Tommy evolved with Canucks broadcasts. He was an NW980 when the Canucks broadcast rights were there. You might have heard him if you were around Vancouver at the time, calling BC Lions games as well. For NW, but first of all, thanks for calling in, Ian. And I mean, I share some of the same feelings. Yeah. I mean, you heard him when I did the cold open. You heard us talk about it again, Jordan, last week. You'll probably hear us refer to it on upcoming episodes too. It's just such a tough situation.
Yeah, completely empathize. It was great to hear some of the memories because obviously not been in this market that long, so it was really nice to hear him go back and get a bit sentimental. So yeah, that was nice to hear, and he didn't get as angry as maybe we got last week, so, but the emotions are clearly still there.
We also got a text message in to the C4 text line. This one comes from an unknown listener, so a word of advice: if you're going to drop a text message or leave us a voicemail, identify yourself so we can identify you. Now, you don't have to. You could say, don't say who I am, but you'll become an unknown listener, such as this one who texted in, Paul Kariya for the next Canucks GM. I think I know who this is.
Who is it? Share with the class.
No, because
no, okay, this, that's not
this
fair.
This person did not identify themselves.
That's true.
But if you're a member of C4 Discord, discord.io/C4podcast, you could probably read between the lines.
Is it ball cool?
It would be completely off the board. I don't know about GM. I kind of like the Trevor Linden is like the president. I kind of was okay with, but then I don't know if I'd want Paul Kariya there because he would be cutting his teeth with the Canucks. Although from, you know, what I understand, Paul is currently happy in the life that he has down in SoCal surfing.
Yeah. And wouldn't you be, I think, with all the Paul Kariya went through in his time in the league, I almost said Kariya and then stopped myself. Yeah, chilled life might be better for him. Yeah, I think we mentioned this before when we talked about Louis. Would love to see him in an NHL job if that's like a top job, if that's what he wants to do, would like it. His first job in management, not to be with the Canucks. We're not in that place right now.
Yeah. So if you have thoughts, hot takes, things that we said that you want to disagree with or agree with, or simply tell us what the weather forecast happens to be, you want to drop us a note on the C4 text line, 604-200-6201, 604-200-6201. I'm going to probably know that number off the top of my head better than I'll actually know my own phone number soon.
Yeah, you're going to forget your own phone number now. And can I just add a caveat to the weather report? I don't want to know how nice it is in Australia, so that's just goes out to Jess, like, please don't phone with that because you're just going to make us jealous.
And actually, just on that note, if you happen to be, you know, international or, you know, a 604 number, that being a Vancouver area code, country code one for those international, you go to speakpipe.com/C4podcast and leave a message directly from your computer there. So as we look to wrap up a phenomenal show, I mean, we had Sarah join us, Sarah Lau at Nuxed, as we talked about. She talked about the Our Voice series. We got to actually talk about a Vancouver Canucks win, which almost seems rare, and then two loser points. But technically speaking, four games, three of them came with points. How bad is that? Not that. It's good. Be positive.
True.
Going all the way.
Yeah, let's take some little Sarah magic and be positive. We got points in three out of four games in a week.
And you know that, like, she, when I said how about the week that was, she, three points out of four games. She's,
yeah,
actually, for sure. Sorry, 3 points, 4 points, because we had two loser points and a win.
Yeah, I have
points in three out of four games. There, so that's,
take care of the loser points, but does not apply when you're in division, but
no. I kind of feel it's awkward, though, at this point, because, you know, normally when we wrap up the show, it's the words of wisdom time, right? And
we've already said we're not doing it.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to, you know, open it up. I
we can have closing. I don't even want to do closing thoughts. Just be like, there's going to be an episode next week. The NHL does not care for our scheduling, so we don't know if it'll be before or after the game. But there will be an episode.
That's true.
That's my closing thoughts.
C4 Discord is around. Discord.io/C4podcast. You can join right now and have a conversation about lasagna. And I kid you not, there was like a significant thread on the theory of being, if you cook two different things of lasagna and then stack one lasagna on top of the other, is that two lasagnas or is that simply one lasagna?
Honestly, we have the smartest and the dumbest conversations, often simultaneously in different channels and often with the same people. But it's a great fun place to be.
It is. But if you do want to come for the actual Canucks chatter, Gate 16 is the place for that. Off topic is where all the craziness ensues. And then right now, if you're into gaming, there's a number of us who drop into Warzone on the regular. It seems to be a Canucks Twitter thing, or at least for a good number of Canucks Twitter. I don't know if you noticed this, Anna, but a couple of us were trying to get Samantha Chang to join us in Warzone. You up for a hot drop yourself?
No.
That's the answer that Sam said too.
Okay. I don't do video games, as you know, and I think I made a vow after growing up with an older brother never to just like watch video games unless, you know, I'm getting paid for it, which that's not in our budget. So I'm going to leave you guys to the Warzone. You guys enjoy that, and I will do other things with my life.
Cool. Maybe if the patrons ask for it, would that be sufficient? If enough patrons were to say, hey, we want to see Anna, give the listeners what they want?
Again, they'd have to pay for it. And, you know, I'm generous. The money can go to the show. It doesn't have to go to me, but it would
have to
be.
Maybe that'll be a perk.
Yeah, I think it would have to be an extra perk.
If you're curious as to what we're talking about, it's patreon.com/C4podcasts where you can support the show, help pay the bills and keep the lights on. But some of the benefits that you get by supporting the show are access to Instead of the Anthems, IOTA, as you might hear us refer to it, our weekly pre-show where we stream live. And then in turn at Listening In and Above, you get our twice monthly episode of Off the Rails, where Anna and I talk about things not related to the Vancouver Canucks, which you might suggest happens in many of our shows, but these episodes are completely off the rails.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel the same when, you know, Matt's not here
to yell at us, but like, yeah. It's like that's the point of the episodes, whereas there's always that nagging feeling when we go off the rails mid-show that we actually should be talking about hockey, so.
Yeah. And consider this, at the start of this show, we were talking about the sounds of our voice, so, hey!
God, that's kind of meta, I think.
Sticking brand. Well, anyhow, if you want to follow us, we're C4podcast.com, twitter.com/the C4podcast. Remember, if you go follow C4podcast on Twitter, it's not us. They preach to a different church. We are the Church of Pedersen, which in itself is an actual Twitter account, too. It's amazing how much I learn. But behalf of Anna, A4Size03, myself, Chris, at LifeForce, I'm going to sign off this week's episode with those magical words, we out.